Good evening. It's Karen Conti, Karen Conti Show. We're starting a little late tonight, but we have a great show. Maybe you have followed this really interesting story down in Peoria. Brent Christensen is on trial, a death penalty case for the murder of a young doctoral student from U of I. He was found guilty this week, and we're going to be talking to Larry Yellen, who is the Fox investigator, investigative journalist. He's an attorney. He's covered trials for the last 26 years for Fox, and we're going to talk about what's actually going on in that courtroom with the jury and whether or not this guy is going to get the death penalty, which is a very interesting case because, as you may know, the death penalty has been abolished in Illinois, but this is a federal case, and we're going to talk about how it got to that point. And then afterwards, we're going to be talking to an attorney, Stephen Leahy, and Steve does IRS work. So if there's anybody out there who's got questions about tax changes, about filing tax returns, maybe you owe some money to the IRS, and maybe you need to resolve it. He's got some really good tips on how to deal with the IRS, tax preparation, and all kinds of things. So stay tuned for that, and I'm going to give out the numbers. So in case you want to call and talk to Steve with me, 981-7200, 312-981-7200. And then, of course, I will be taking your legal questions probably around into the 8 o'clock hour on any legal topic. And that number, again, is 981-7200. So tomorrow is National Postal Workers Day. So make sure you say hello and thank you to your mailman. And one other thing I want to hit before we take a break is that tomorrow, texting while driving is going to be a bigger problem than it has been in the past. It's always been illegal to do that, but now what's going to happen is you'll be cited for a moving violation, which is a little bit more serious, and you'll have a blemish on your driving record. So the first time you're caught, the fine is $75, second time $100, etc. So make sure that you don't ever text and drive, but now there's a bigger punishment for it. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show. Stay tuned. This is WGN.
Hello.
Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on 720 WGN.
29-year-old Brent Christensen has been on trial in downstate Peoria for the murder of a 26-year-old University of Illinois doctoral student, Yingying Zhang. He abducted her at a bus stop. He raped her, tortured her, and killed her, and the body has never been found. This last week, the jury found him guilty, and now the case goes to the penalty phase where the jury gets to decide whether Christensen will receive life in prison or the death penalty. With us tonight to talk about the case is Larry Yellen. He's an attorney and award-winning investigative journalist, reporter and anchor for Fox 32 for the last at least 26 years. And he was actually down in Peoria for some of the trial and the closing arguments. Hi, Larry. Thank you for joining me.
Hi, Karen.
Thank you for joining me. And I, this case is just very, very interesting because, as our listeners probably know, we don't have the death penalty in Illinois anymore. What is the reason that this case comes to a jury with the possibility of the death penalty?
Well, the prosecutors who were investigating this case decided to hand it over to, well, the FBI got involved because the victim was from China, and they decided to make this a federal case instead of a state murder prosecution, and the federal laws do allow for the death penalty in a case where there's kidnapping followed by a death. Killing. That's how they characterize this case. And so in all 50 states, even those, I think 20 or 21 that don't allow the death penalty, you can have a federal case that brings the death penalty.
And they really don't use the federal death penalty very often. I think Timothy McVeigh was the biggest, most prominent case that we saw, but and a few terrorists and things like that. But it, to my understanding, it really isn't used very much by the federal government.
Yeah, there's only about 60 people sitting on the federal death row. I guess, you know, depending on how you look at it, that's compared to several thousand, I think, who are sitting on the state death rows. And it's rarely used. There's only been three executions since the federal death penalty was brought back. Those were all, it was brought back, I think, in the 80s. And in 2001 through 2003, there were three executions, and so it's very rare. But this is a case where there's a strong feeling on the behalf of the prosecution and the victim's family that there should be the death penalty applied. By the way, you started by saying Brent Christensen, 29 years old. Today's June 30th. He turned 30 today.
Oh, wow. You know, it was a surprise move that he admitted, his lawyer admitted his guilt in the opening statements. Was that truly a surprise? Was it something that surprised everybody in the courtroom?
I wasn't there in the courtroom that day, but it was truly surprising, in part because those of us who have covered cases for decades, like you have rarely seen that happen. And then some people were asking, well, then why do they still have to have the 8-day trial with the evidence by the prosecution? And the reason, as explained by the prosecutors, was that even though the defense lawyers said during their opening statements that he committed the crime, those words did not come from his mouth, and the words of the lawyers are not to be considered as evidence. So there was no evidence, and the state still had the burden to prove that he was guilty, so they go ahead with the trial.
And so what's the strategy? If you were a guessing person just having seen these kinds of trials, what are they trying to steal the thunder of the horrific nature of this crime by admitting it and hoping that he's going to get life instead of death?
I think they started out that day by saying that he admits he committed the crime, but this is all about his life. And my own theory, and I'm not sure what's in the defense lawyers' minds, is that they're going to be suggesting during the penalty phase that this is someone who is mentally ill. His infatuation with serial killers, his infatuation with Ted Bundy in particular, that infamous serial killer from the 1970s. He did a lot of drinking. I think they're going to suggest that there's some mental illness in this case, and I think by laying out the horrors of the crime itself and the details over those 8 days, I think they're hoping that some of that sits with the jury. And it also allowed them, as the defense, to start planting the seeds about his drinking and his marital life falling apart and his college education falling apart. He wasn't going to be the brilliant physicist that he had hoped to be at one point. I think that allowed them to lay the seeds for what will be a very interesting sentencing hearing, which is like a mini trial in itself, with witnesses and people talking about his childhood and his positive points and his upbringing. His father, for example, will take the stand, it's expected, at the hearing. And there will also be experts. They're called mitigation experts. They've hired people to research his past and come up with everything they can to explain why this man should not be put to death.
Having dealt with the death penalty in my own practice at least once,
I know you have,
and actually taught the death penalty at University of Illinois College of Law. You follow these cases, and it's hard. You've got someone who's committed this horrific crime, in some cases multiple horrific crimes, and the best you can do is to make the guy look crazy. I mean, because it's like he's so crazy that he committed this crime, and that somehow ameliorates what he did.
And I imagine also to point out that despite what he did, that he does have some redeeming value. And that's what they look for. They go back to the day he was born and point out that there are reasons why this man should be kept alive and not put to death.
Peoria is a very conservative area, and I actually have tried some cases down there. My guess is that this is going to be a real uphill battle for him, and that the death penalty is something that is very likely in this case. I mean, just knowing that kind of jury pool.
I think so. I looked at the jurors, and they were predominantly white, middle age or older for most of them. And I think that because the mistakes made in death penalty cases have not been on the front pages the way they were in the 90s and in the early 2000s, the things that brought George Ryan as governor to pass that moratorium, to suspend all death sentences in Illinois, take everybody off death row. The death penalty has not been controversial in Illinois, and the mistakes that occurred years ago have not been in the headlines because we don't have it anymore. So these jurors haven't seen recently at least 5 years of headlines about how sometimes the wrong person can be put to death. I think you're right, it's a conservative jury pool, and I think they're going to look at this crime, and my prediction would be that unless they buy the mental health issues that a death penalty, a federal death penalty in a state that bans the death penalty, is likely.
And, you know, one of the things that I'm seeing in the media is that apparently there was an offer made by Christensen's lawyers saying, we will show you where the body is in exchange, give us life. And do you know anything about that offer, if that was in fact made, and how that's going to be handled in the penalty phase?
The defense says it did occur, and they're asking now that it not be allowed, that they don't want the jury to hear that, because they don't want the jury to, they don't want the prosecutors to be able to imply that Christensen refused to give any information about the location of the body, when in fact they say he did. So they don't want the jurors to hear, this man has never told us where the body might be. They don't want the jurors to hear that, because they say he did offer to do that or in the first 6 months after he was arrested, and the prosecutors turned that down. I was at the press conference after the jury found him guilty, where the victim's parents came out, a very emotional press conference, especially the mother. She was uncontrollably sobbing as the victim's father gave a statement, and the Zhang family has said that they do agree with prosecutors. They have been consulted, and they would like to see the death penalty in this case. But they've also said very strongly right from the start that they would like to take her remains back to China and treat them with the respect that they deserve.
Well, in my view, if I were a juror and I saw that he was trying to cut a deal to save his life by holding that body out in exchange, I would really find that offensive. I mean, I would hold that against him, not in favor, that he was trying to help the family.
That you could argue that that's a much lesser crime than he committed, but that's another crime. That's extortion.
Right. Exactly.
Holding this secret out until he gets what he wants from the government.
Yep. You know, Larry, just to kind of go back over, I mean, I've worked with you at Fox for a long time, and you've been there for a long time, and we just passed that 25th anniversary of the O.J. Bronco chase, which sort of put you into the mode of doing commentary.
Where are you going with this? You're trying to date me here?
Well, you were only three at the time, but I was just thinking, you know, that case kind of moved you into a situation where you did legal commentary for Fox, and you've been doing it ever since. Did you ever look back and think how your life would have been different had O.J. not done what he did?
I think a lot of talking heads on television knew that. Those of us who provide, there weren't, in the 80s, there weren't things called legal analysts on television.
Right.
You didn't have cable TV on 24/7. And I was hired at Fox as an investigative reporter, and I was doing in-depth investigations. And the Simpson case happened, and I remember Walter Jacobson and Robin Robinson. If you remember the early days when O.J. was first arrested, they had pretrial hearings, and they were televised nationally all day long. And Walter and Robin were sitting on the set all day long, filling time, and they'd have these long sidebars and moments like that. And my news director said, Larry, why don't you go up and help them out? And I said, well, I went to law school. I'm a member of the bar, but honestly, I've never practice law. I've talked to a lot of lawyers, covered a lot of trials, but they said, Larry, go help him out. And that's how I became a legal analyst.
Well, there you go.
I don't have the experience in the courtroom that you do, and I think that gives you a much deeper insight.
Yes, but you're excellent at what you do. Larry, thank you so much for joining us. Have a nice holiday.
My pleasure. Have a great holiday, too, Karen.
All right, take care. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show on WGN.
Because I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man.
Tomorrow is the 76th anniversary of the passage of the law that mandates that a federal government can withhold your income tax from your paycheck. That happened in 1943. So in honor of that, joining us to talk about taxes is Chicago attorney Stephen Leahy. He's with OPIM Tax Resolution in the law office of Stephen Leahy, which helps people and businesses fight the IRS and resolve their tax problems. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Karen. How are you today?
And you're all dressed up. You're all dressed up with a suit and a tie, and you look great.
Always wear a suit and a tie.
Well, don't you feel smarter when you wear a suit and a tie?
I do, but you know, as an attorney, you've got to come across as an attorney. So
you do. You know, I just had a little issue with some people in my office saying, you know, you've got to look the part.
That's absolutely true.
You absolutely do, and yoga pants don't cut it.
I don't wear yoga pants.
I don't want to see you in yoga pants. All right, let's get serious, okay? Let's not let this go too far downhill too fast. All right, we're going to have fun with this. Now, the IRS, they're the ogre, right? That kind of the people you don't want to deal with. If you owe the IRS money, what are your options?
Well, the first thing I always tell people is when you're dealing with the IRS, the first thing you want to do is get in compliance. And that means you got to go back and file all your unfiled tax returns. And that's like the secret ingredient of solving any IRS problem. Because compliance not only begins to get into some sort of an installment agreement or something with the IRS, but once you get into an agreement with them, to stay in that agreement, you must stay in compliance. And that means filing your tax return on time and paying in the future on time. And I think a lot of people don't get that because you think you can keep doing what you're doing and the IRS will just kind of take a back road to you, and it doesn't work that way.
So, you know, people don't file their tax returns. I've heard it. I've heard lawyers who don't file tax returns. I've heard businessmen. I've heard really successful people mm-hmm. of all walks of life, even people who might be entitled to a refund. This happens a lot. So what do you do when someone comes to you and they haven't filed for 10 years? What is it you can do about that?
Again, the first thing you got to do is get in compliance. And what people don't understand is just because you haven't filed in 10 years or 15 years, and sometimes like the longer it's been, the more dysfunctional you become because you put your head in the sand and you pretend, now what am I going to do?
Right.
I mean, there's nothing I can do now. I can't go back 10 years and redo my tax return. One of the good things is you don't always have to go back 10 years. And so the IRS will understand that. And if they have 1099 forms or W-2 forms or any kind of tax information that you were to receive from your financial institution, for instance, the IRS has that stuff. So I can get that stuff from them and file your back tax returns for you, even if you don't have any of the information. And that's one of the things that hold people up. Well, I don't have the information. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And so there's ways to go about and get that information.
But I think it's like human nature, though, right? You let something go, whether it's your health or whether it's, you know, someone you haven't spoken to. And then it just becomes harder and harder and harder to rectify it. But I guess today the message is from Steve is don't wait.
Don't wait.
Don't wait, because it's just going to get worse. And once you start doing something, don't you think your clients feel better already just calling you and having a plan?
Absolutely. And one of the big things is I get when people are leaving my office is, man, I feel better already. So I always tell them, you hand me the problem. Now you don't have to deal with it. Get a good night's sleep, because it's really the sleep that gets people. You know, when you're laying in bed and you're thinking about these things, I have to deal with this tax thing.
So now you've got somebody and they've complied, and so they've filed their tax returns and they can't pay it all. Okay, so they've got an amount of money that they can't pay. What are their options to try to work it out?
Okay, so there's six things you can do if you owe the IRS money. So the first thing is, I can pay them, right? I can write them a check.
Or borrow money and pay them, right?
I will tell people, if you could borrow the money and pay the IRS, do that, because you're better off. You're better off owing anybody but the IRS.
Right.
And the second thing you can do is you can do an installment agreement. And there's different types of installment agreements. And this is one of the things that gets people all hung up, because they say, I owe so much, I'll never be able to pay it. But there's programs out there. There's ways we can set up an installment agreement, not based on how much you owe, but how much you can pay them. And see, this way you can get the IRS to stop coming after you, stop garnishing your wages, stop freezing your bank accounts. If you own a business, they'll go after your clients.
Ugh.
So I've had
which could destroy your business.
Yeah, I've had an insurance guy, actually a chiropractor, and he got most of his money from different insurance companies. Well, the IRS targeted all these insurance companies, one after each and every one of them, and took all of his money. So every month the insurance companies could not send him the money. They had to send it to the IRS. So this can, of course, obviously ruin your business, right? But if you come up with a plan with the IRS, even if you're not going to be able to pay them everything you owe them, prove it to them. And it's like any other legal case, right? You have to come up with evidence and present your evidence to the IRS in such a way that it's persuasive to prove to them how much you can pay. And if you can't pay them everything, they'll come up. You don't have to.
My feeling is that there's been a little kinder and gentler IRS maybe in the last 10 years. And that, you know, I think people should understand that the IRS wants you to pay. They don't want to come after you. They don't want to hurt you. They want you to have your business. They want you to make money. They want you to pay it, but they want you to do what you say you're going to do.
Well, I'm going to take a little bit of a different tact on that, okay? Because there's lots of programs for people who don't have the money. Okay, but if you have money, if you have assets, if you have a good job,
they're not kinder and gentler on you. They're actually very difficult to deal with, and they actually come after you hard. We have an 85% in compliance rate here, voluntary compliance in America, that people file their tax returns on time and pay their taxes on time. But one of the reasons why they do that is because they're so afraid of the IRS. So, right, if I don't pay the IRS on time and I don't file my taxes, my tax returns on time, and I ask for some deal from the IRS, well, if they make it easy on me, I'm going to turn around and tell my friends, you know, I owed the IRS some money. It was simple. They let me go. It wasn't a big deal.
Right.
Well, then we're not going to get an 85% tax compliance, right? So the IRS does make examples of people and try to make it so when your friends ask you, hey, how did that work? You say, don't ever do that. That's the worst thing in the world. That, you know, they come after you and they come after you hard. So there's a double-edged sword there. If you can't pay them, there are programs. But if you can, there aren't any.
For people out there who are saying, you know, I'll do this myself. I'll work out a deal with the IRS. I'll call them up. I'm listening to Steve, but I can't afford a lawyer. Should people be dealing with the IRS if they owe a significant amount of money?
Okay, there's the key there, a significant amount of money. Because what you think you can pay the IRS and what the IRS believes you can pay them are two different things. And this is what I was just mentioning about putting it together like a legal case, right? Putting evidence together. So if I'm trying to represent myself in an important matter in court, I don't know how to put up the evidence together, right? I don't know how to present it to somebody. That's what lawyers do.
Right.
And that's why sometimes you need a lawyer to do that, because you want to get the best deal possible. And if you're dealing with it by yourself, you're not going to get that best deal because you don't know the rules as the IRS does, right? So they're going to use the rules for their own benefit and against you. So you need to have someone that understands. Again, the key there is significant amount of money, if you owe a significant amount of money.
Switching topics a little bit, when should a person hire a tax preparer as opposed to doing it themselves on any one of the number of programs or even through the IRS themselves?
I think any time you own your own business or you have some sort of any kind of something different. So, for instance, 1099-Cs, these are when they cancel a debt against you. So if I was in foreclosure and a company sends me a 1099-C saying they canceled the debt that I owed them. Now, this gets complicated.
Yeah.
And so you shouldn't try to do this yourself. Actually, you shouldn't even try to get it. Most tax preparers don't understand that stuff because it gets complicated. Another thing is if I run my own business, don't do your own tax returns because that's a red flag right there. So whenever you, like for instance, my business, we prepare tax returns, but I don't prepare my own.
Ah,
I have somebody else do that. You need an independent third party who's not going to be, the red flag isn't going to come up and say, hey, he might be cheating here, right? We need an independent third party who's taking a look at my tax returns. And it's not something that I'm personally involved in.
We're here with Steve Leahy, who is helps people solve their tax problems in their businesses. There is a book that you can get by contacting his law firm, correct? Can you just tell everyone what that contact is before we go to break?
Sure. The book is Deal With Your IRS Problems Today. And go to freeirsbook.com, freeirsbook.com, and I'll give you a copy. So go there and get it.
Okay. We're going to be continuing to talk about this topic, but I'm going to also be taking legal calls and legal questions. If you have a question for Steve about taxes, bankruptcy, or anything like that, please give us a call, 981-7200, or text to 981-7200. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN.
I paid my income tax today. I never felt so proud before to be right there with millions more who paid their income tax today.
We're here with Steve Leahy, who pays his income taxes. Not only does he pay his income taxes, he helps you if you haven't, and he helps you if you haven't paid, and he helps you if you owe money. Steve Leahy, can you give out your contact information in case people want to get your free book, How to Deal with Your IRS Problems Today, and how they would contact you at your law office?
You can call me at 312-664-6649. Again, that number is 312-664-6649, or go to freeirsbook.com and get a free copy of my book.
It looks really good. It looks like it's in plain English.
It is.
And it kind of helps you through, all the different things that could happen. And it looks really, really good. I'm going to keep a couple copies in case people call me, and I will be happy to send it to them. Steve, I had a texter who said, what is the Fresh Start Tax Plan? Can you answer that?
Yes. Actually, it's called the Fresh Start Initiative.
Okay.
And this happened after the 2008 debacle, when everybody was having problems with money. and everybody was losing their jobs, and the IRS redid some of the parameters and how they calculate how much you must pay the IRS. As I mentioned to you, you have to know the rules, because the IRS has standards when it comes to determining what your disposable income is. And I don't, but disposable income is the difference between what my income is and what my expenses are, actually what they say allowed expenses. So if they don't allow me those expenses, then my disposable income goes up and they want more money from me. So part of the Fresh Start initiative was they allowed you to take some deductions that they didn't let you do before. For instance, your student loan payments. They used to not let you, they didn't recognize that as an allowable expense, and now they do. One of the big things that they changed was the offer in compromise. And the offers in compromise is when it's a calculation. So a lot of people get this, you hear this on the radio all the time, you know, pay pennies on the dollar and you won't have to worry about the IRS. That works for some people, but not most people. But what that is it's just a calculation. It's not a negotiation where you say, you know, IRS, I know I owe you $60,000. Will you take 10? Will you take 5? It's a calculation. And so part of the Fresh Start initiative was changing the way they calculated how much they would expect, they would accept from you. And so it's come way down, that number, what they would accept from you. So the initiative was a way for them to get more people into these programs that they could afford. And it's been pretty good. It's not good for everybody, but it is a good program.
I get a lot of listeners who call me at my office and talk a little bit about problems that they have with medical bills. Medical bills are a huge problem. And what would you recommend for the listeners out there who may have racked up some medical bills and other bills, and they're insurmountable, they can't seem to pay them off? What would you recommend for those listeners?
Well, we talked a little bit about this before, Karen. It's like, what's the answer for most legal questions? Is it depends.
Yeah.
Right? Because sometimes the best way to solve your IRS problem and medical bills is protection under the bankruptcy laws. But that's not right for everybody. Right. But so most medical bills, most collection companies you can work with, they'll work with you to try to avoid bankruptcy and get something, because they won't get paid in bankruptcy. And most people want to avoid bankruptcy at all costs. So medical bills are one of those things that you can generally negotiate a good repayment plan with and avoid a bankruptcy. But sometimes bankruptcy is the fastest, easiest way to resolve it.
But taxes are not dischargeable in bankruptcy, meaning if you owe the IRS and you file for bankruptcy, that doesn't always solve your problem, does it?
The answer is it doesn't always. I was going to say that too. It can, though. Sometimes that's the fastest, easiest way to solve your IRS problem. There's three dates that are important to determine if you can discharge a tax debt in bankruptcy. First, it's got to be due more than 3 years ago. So this year was 2019. Our 2018 taxes were due. So 3 years ago, our 2015 taxes were due. So those would now be dischargeable in bankruptcy. They have to be filed more than 2 years ago, and the tax must be assessed more than 240 days ago. And if all three of those things are correct, you can discharge taxes in bankruptcy. And most people think you can't.
That's interesting. I'm going to talk to some just general questions that people have. You see all this, I think it was Wesley Snipes had owed taxes, and lots of them, you know, and he was a sovereign citizen or whatever his argument was, that he doesn't have to pay taxes. Does anybody get to claim that they are they're going to opt out of paying income taxes?
You know, I get this a lot, and this is what they call them, tax protesters.
Yes, protesters.
And I just had a guy on the phone to tell me this. We know, but you know, this is not, because they don't believe the 16th Amendment was passed correctly,
right?
Or it just doesn't cover this kind of stuff. Well, Wesley Snipes went to jail for 3 years. What he went to jail for was not filing his tax return. You can get 1 year for every year you don't file. So they plea bargained, and he got 3 years for each, because he hadn't filed for 3 years. But his position was, hey, I don't have to pay my taxes. When people call me with that argument, I tell them, well, if I thought that was true, I wouldn't pay my taxes. And I can't represent you and try to tell you that you shouldn't pay taxes when I'm paying the taxes. So if I had a good argument, I wouldn't pay my taxes either.
A texter says, if mailing taxes, I strongly recommend using certified mail with a signature receipt requested. Keep that receipt. Twice the Illinois Department of Revenue claimed I didn't file. 5 years later, I refiled and presented the signed signed mail receipt and avoided the penalties and interest. Really?
Yeah, that's actually a good, that's good advice, although most of us now file electronically. And
right.
So we have electronic document that says that we filed. The Illinois Department of Revenue is a whole different animal than the federal. A lot of people come to see me about IRS problems, and really what they have is a Illinois Department of Revenue problem.
Okay.
And that's a different, it's similar but different. Usually if I have an IRS problem, I generally have an Illinois Department of Revenue problem too, but it's usually much smaller than my IRS problem because the taxes are a lot less. Although the IRS, let me just say
sure.
this, that the Illinois Department of Revenue, very hard to deal with.
Okay.
Very hard to deal with.
Our governor is proposing a graduated state tax. Can you just, without going into great detail, how is that going to affect people, generally speaking?
Well, I think it goes to the SALT deductions now, right? The state and local tax deductions that that they limited in the last tax bill to $10,000 a year. So here in Illinois, many people have more than $10,000 a year in property taxes. But now when you start adding more taxes, more state income taxes, those aren't going to be deductible from your, and you, so you're really going to be, it's really going to hurt people.
Okay. Well, and I suppose the argument is that the state needs the money. Let's take one quick one. And you know what? I'm going to give out the numbers here. I'm going to keep Steve here, but I'm going to take all legal questions. So if you have any legal questions for Steve or for me, he's going to stay here in a little bit. And I'm going to give out those numbers. 981-7200-312-981-7200 or text to that number. One final question quickly before we take a break. Do people who are not citizens have to file taxes?
The answer is yes. You know, and they have more obligations too. I have a lot of people who are here on a visa or they're working here on a green card, and they have accounts overseas, and this is what they call FATCA. You know, the foreign account that you have to report, that a lot of people don't even understand about that. So they have assets overseas, and they're supposed to report them to the IRS, and that's important because you go to jail for that.
Ooh, interesting. Now's your time to call 981-7200, 312-981-7200. I see the phone lines are lit up. We're going to get to all of your calls. I hope Ben is our producer. You'll talk to him. You'll give him some facts and what you're looking for, and we can try to help solve your legal problems. I'm here with Steve Leahy, who helps people and businesses fight the IRS and resolve tax problems. Thank you for hanging on with us. Can you tell people your contact information and how to get your free book if people have some issues with the IRS?
Certainly. I'm here in Chicago. My office number is 312-664-6649. Again, it's 312-664-6649. You can get a book by going to freeirsbook.com, and I'll give you a copy of the book.
All right. So give us a call here with questions about tax issues. If you have questions about bankruptcy, Steve can address those. If you have questions about family law or something you've seen in the news that you have a question about, we'll all try to give you some answers or steer you in the right direction. Let's go to Dave in Des Plaines. Hi, Dave. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show.
Thank you. Thank you for your show tonight. I have a question. So I have a small business, since me and my wife, and we're self-funding a 401k. So my understanding is you can borrow up to $50,000 max out of your 401k and pay it back over a loan within 5 years. But what if I'm correct on that, what I'm trying to figure out is, is there an interest rate I have to pay back? Can you do it at zero? And if there is an interest rate and I'm paying interest, who do I pay it back to, myself?
The answer is it depends on what financial institution you're with, right? Because it's really going to
be a Schwab account.
Okay, so it's going to be geared by Schwab and the agreement that they have. So there's no single answer to that, and so you have to really call them and find that out.
I got you. It's up to them with how it's paid back,
exactly,
and so forth.
Exactly, because they're the one. It's your money, but
right.
You know, they're kind of funding it. Right.
All right.
Right. I'm just trying to avoid legal problems before I get to call you.
That's right. Thank you, Dave. Thank you for that
makes
question.
Sense.
Appreciate it.
Be proactive. I always tell people.
That's right. Oops. Let's go to Don in the suburbs. Hi, Don. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show.
Hello. Hello.
Hi.
I have a quickie here. I haven't filed income tax in several years. My wife and I are both on Social Security, and we were told that we don't have to file anymore because we don't make enough. Is that a fact?
I don't know what your income level is, but there is a level after which you do not have to file your tax returns. However, I generally will tell people to file them anyway because there's lots of statutes that begin when I file, and if I do not file, then they do not begin. Now, if my income is, if I have a limited income and I'm never going to have more, then it may make sense not to file your tax return. But generally, I say it makes sense to file, and it doesn't cost anything if I'm under a certain amount of money. You can do it online for free. And again, then you get it filed, and there's different statutes that go into place once you file your return, and they don't affect you if you don't file. So that's why I generally will talk about file.
Okay.
Thank you, Don. Thank you for the call.
I think
it's a question that a lot of people have, and I appreciate it. Yes. Let's go to John in Chicago. Welcome to WGN. Hi, John.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I kind of live off the grid. For about a decade, I have not filed taxes. I have cash-paying jobs. However, I don't own anything. If you would have, I mean, really, I mean, if they examine my assets, say this guy's got nothing to speak of. Mm-hmm. I have no hidden money. I mean, now, like I said, I haven't filed. But then again, if they research me, they will see I have nothing. Am I in trouble?
The answer is you could go to jail for 1 year for every year you don't file your tax return. And if you're working under the radar, as people tell me all the time, let's remember there is no radar, right? It's a computer program. But you know, the answer is it is illegal because you're not paying taxes on the money that you're receiving, and you're working under cash. So there's no record of it. So the IRS doesn't know you're getting it, and there's no way they could know that you're getting it. But you know, there is a violation of the law there. So that, you know.
I understand that part, but then, like, don't people get into trouble when they don't file taxes, but yet they have numerous assets and they can't account for how they got them?
Well, yes, there could be tax fraud, right? Because then you can't account for these assets. And so, yes, that would be tax fraud. That's a whole different thing than you're discussing. You know, most people that I have many people come to see me and they haven't filed in 10 years or longer, and they're living in the shadows, and they can't have a bank account, and they can't buy anything, and they can't own a home, and they can't get a job, and they can't put money in a bank account. Here's my thing on that. There's no way to live. And you don't have to live that way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm excess cash, nothing to do with it. Yeah, I get you, man.
John, I think you should give Steve a call. I'm going to have Steve give out the number again.
312-664-6649. If I can help you, I'd be happy to help you. If I can't, I'll point you to someone who can.
All right. That sounds great. Let's see. Let's go to Dan in Addison. Hi, Dan. Welcome to WGN.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Yeah, my question is, I have a friend who says that there was no law passed that you had to pay income tax. And the IRS called him in twice, and they let him go because he read the law to them. I'm not sure exactly what law it is. And he had his daughter come in. They called his daughter in, and it was the same scenario. And they let him go. She did not have to pay. Is that true?
I don't know about your friend. This is what we were talking about earlier about tax protesters who have this idea that they have some secret law that if they just bring it out, the IRS will leave them alone. You know, people like Wesley Snipes, he spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in high class lawyers to get him on, and he went to prison. So if there was a way out, don't you think he could not gotten out? And or all these people who are really smart, great lawyers, they pay their taxes. Why is that? Is it just because they're just trying to be good citizens? Or is it because the law requires them to do it? And they know that if they don't do it, they'll go to jail. Well, I think it's the latter, right? You'll go to jail if you don't pay. So, you know, I hear this all the time, you know, that there's the 16th Amendment wasn't passed correctly, or there's some secret. If I just tell them I'm aware that I just don't believe it's true. Now, I don't know about your daughter and what happened there, what the circumstances were there. But again, if there was such a rule, I would probably know about it and I would use it myself.
Dan, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Let's do a quick one. Mike in West Chicago. Let me give out the numbers again because we're going to be taking calls throughout the next half an hour. 312-981-7200. Either for Steve Leahy, who is going to be talking about taxes and bankruptcy and things like that, or any other legal question you might have. Let's go to Mike in West Chicago. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Karen. My question is, I was in a car accident and the other party did not have
insurance. So my insurance company is going to compensate me under uninsured motorist liability for the pain that I suffered. And I had a cracked rib. I had pain for 2 months from that. And they recently offered me $2,500 for that. I was just wondering, does that sound like a reasonable amount?
And let me just ask you this. What is the limit on the, is it $5,000? Do you know what the limit is for your underinsured or your uninsured motorist?
For one person, it's $500,000.
Oh, it's, whoa. Okay. So are you sure that the uninsured has that limit?
Yeah. And for more than one person involved, it's $1 million on my coverage.
Okay.
Medical payments now, that's something different.
Right.
That's like hospital bills and everything. My limit there is $50,000.
Okay.
Because I think that's a state maximum.
So generally speaking, I can't really tell you if that's a fair offer or not. It doesn't sound like it. And I'll tell you what, these insurance companies, even the good ones, will try to lowball you. They will think that you're not going to get a lawyer, and they're going to maybe wait till the statute of limitations runs, and they'll talk to you, and they'll try to get you to say you're feeling better. And so, you know what, if you have any significant injuries, I mean, if you just have a little soreness or maybe, you know, a little pain for a little bit and you don't have any doctor's bills, you could settle on your own. I don't think there's a problem with that. But a cracked rib, I mean, you might have complications. This is something that you probably should get a lawyer for. And, you know, they'll take it on a contingency. And my good educated guess is that whatever you pay that lawyer, and you're not going to pay him up front, you're going to pay him when you get your settlement, it's going to be worth it, because that lawyer is going to know not only what your injury is worth, what the pain and suffering is worth, but also what this insurance company generally does. These are people who do this for a living. So they're going to know what the parameters are and what the settlement should be in a case like this. And, you know, let me refer you. Let me refer you to somebody good. I'm going to have to drop you right here, but I'm going to give out my number at the office, and I'd like you to call me or email me. And I can send you to someone who handles these smaller cases. We call these smaller personal injury cases. My number is 312-332-7800 or WGN at AskKarenConti.com. We're going to take a break. You're listening to WGN. Yeah. Hold on to it. Make it and save it. It's Karen Conti's show. I'm here with Steve Leahy. We're talking about, well, we're actually talking your legal questions about every single last thing you possibly have questions about, whether it's family law, or Steve is going to be talking about taxes and bankruptcy and things like that. Taking your calls here at 312-981-7200. And Steve, why don't you give out your number at your office in case people want to call and have a private conversation with you?
Certainly. It's 312-664-6649. Again, it's 312-664-6649. Give me a call. Be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Let's go to Ruth in Naperville out west. Hi, Ruth. How are you?
Hi there. I'm doing great.
What's your legal question?
Very quickly, my son lives in Asia, and he's been living and working there for the last 10 years. He got married, and he's going to be bringing his wife back, and they're asked about income tax. Well, he never filed income tax because he didn't earn any money in the state. Does he have to file?
The answer is yes. He still has to file.
Oh.
Your taxes, if you're an American citizen, anywhere in the world that you make money, it's taxable. Okay, now there are some, you might not have to pay taxes on it, but you have to report it. And so he should be reporting his tax return. Yes.
Oh, okay. And how does he do that? Is there a form, or is this require, you know, should he consult an attorney?
No, I think it depends what he was making, and so the devil's in the details about what he had to do to make up, you know, whether he owes anything. Again, you can make a lot of money overseas and not have to pay taxes on it, but you're supposed to file your tax returns. This has come up recently in the last 5 or 10 years, where people overseas, many people, you might have heard that a lot of foreign foreigners are giving up their citizenship because of this, because the IRS starts going after people now that haven't been in the States for many years, but they're still going after their assets.
So, Steve, would you recommend for Ruth's son for him to just contact a CPA here in the United States to go ahead and file those returns?
Yeah, call me. We do tax returns.
Okay.
We help people with tax returns because that's a big part of my job, is getting people in compliance, and compliance means filing your back tax returns. So you can call me at 312-664-6649. If I can't help them, I'll find someone who can, but I can at least point them in the right direction.
Okay.
Oh, thank you. Very helpful. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. And someone else had a question about whether or not if you are in this country, but you're not a U.S. citizen, do you have to pay taxes? Mm-hmm. What are the rules on that?
The answer is yes. You still have to pay taxes.
Wow.
Because you're making money. Otherwise, it wouldn't be fair, right? If I'm not a citizen and I can make money here and not pay taxes. But if I'm a citizen, I have to pay taxes. Now, I have to say, there's lots of things that aren't fair about stuff like, you know, but that generally, yes, you have to make pay taxes if you're here in America making money.
981-7200. We're talking about taxes and bankruptcy and all kinds of other legal questions. Let's go to Ben in Chicago. Ben.
Hello.
Que es su problema?
Quick question. I inherited a fair sum of money down in Mexico from my dad. It's in a bank account. Do I have to claim it to the IRS?
Well, it might not be taxable, but if you have money in a foreign bank account, then the answer is yes, you have to report that. And if you don't report, if it's more than $10,000 in a foreign bank account, this is the FATCA, then you must report it on in a yearly report to the IRS.
But Steve, wait, hold on. If he got an inheritance,
I'm not talking about taxes now. I'm talking about reporting money in a foreign bank account from an American citizen. Even if you're not an American citizen and you're here in America and you own and you have a bank account with more than $10,000 in it, you have to report it to the IRS.
Ah, okay. And that's a form that you fill out as
that's
part
correct.
Of your tax.
That's correct.
It's
not part of your taxes, but it's really not a tax issue. It's a treasury issue, but it's administered by the IRS.
Ben, did you know that?
No, I didn't. But I've got one more quick question.
Sure.
Is there accountant-client privilege, like attorney-client privilege?
Very good question.
Yes, very good question.
The answer is no. Okay, that's why you can't.
Yes,
that's why it makes sense to. Well, a lot of people go to these places, these tax resolution companies, and they're not attorneys. There is no attorney-client relationship. There's no accountant-client relationship.
So let's flesh that out a little bit.
Yeah.
So if you're talking to your lawyer, it's confidential for the most part. We'll just say that's the general rule, right? So if you make an admission or whatever, Steve cannot be forced to tell the world what you just said. But in an accountant situation, if you told your accountant, I didn't file for the last 10 years and for some reason that's relevant, then you could be forced to say it.
Absolutely true.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So is that why it's better to go to a tax lawyer in that regard?
Because that's one of the key differences between accountants and attorneys. And that's why it makes so much sense to go see an attorney when you have some issues, because you know, you might not know if it's criminal or not. Maybe it's not criminal, but maybe you should talk to an attorney before you talk to your accountant.
Okay, Ben, thank
you. I will be calling you.
All right.
Thank you.
Muchas gracias. I'm just speaking Spanish because that's where his money is. Okay, here we go. Jeff in Dundee. I think we answered this question, but let's hear what he has to say. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Hi, Karen. Hi, Steve. Thanks for taking my call. If I just paid the withholding, the W-2 forms that I filled out since I was in high school with whatever company I worked for, then why am I still in jeopardy? I don't file the taxes, and I just let the government have the tax of whatever was withheld.
That's a good question. So if you're not claiming the refund, why should you file taxes?
The answer,
I don't want to mess around with it. It's a big aggravation.
I agree with you, and I have a lot of clients that have this problem. Actually, you're right in the sense that if you don't file your tax return and the IRS owes you money, they're not going to come after you. There's no fine or penalty for not claiming your money. But this is what happens. I had a client who did just what you did. They don't file. And then they
they sold their home. But when the home gets sold, right, that financial information gets sent to the IRS. Well, the IRS then, or if I sell stocks, for instance, that's reported to the IRS. And then it looks like I owe a lot of money. And then the IRS will file my tax return for me. This is called a substitute for return. And then they'll assess a big tax against me because I haven't filed my own tax. They'll do it for me. And that will then it gets messy. Then it gets really messy. And again, now I have this up. We have something what we call the IRS protection plan. And that's what we do. We do your tax return for you every year. And if you have a refund coming, it's more than enough to pay someone to do it. So to have somebody do it for you. It doesn't make sense to let the IRS keep the money.
All right, Jeff, thank you so much for the call. And we have a caller texter who said basically you help people with federal taxes and state taxes, just to be clear, right?
The answer is yes. It's harder to work with the Illinois Department of Revenue. There's not as many rules set up or programs set up like the IRS has certain rules set up, and I can hold them to all those rules. Illinois doesn't have them so clear, and it's
so they're
harder.
A little harder to deal with.
Exactly,
but you still do that.
I do. And it goes to they have a collection agency that works for the Illinois Department of Revenue. Harder to deal with.
Okay, we're here with Steve Leahy, and we have 15 more minutes, and I'm to be taking all of your calls. I'm going to try to get to everybody. 981-7200, 312-981-7200. Let me give out my number. I'm going to give out Steve's number. If you have a legal question and you'd like to contact me, I don't always have the right answer. I don't always have the exact answer, but I can always get you in the right direction, maybe send you a link, send you to an agency, or send you to a referral of mine who I know is a good attorney and practices in your area. Best way to reach me is the email wgn@askkarenconti.com. WGN@askkarenconti.com or 312-332-7800. And Steve, who concentrates his practice in helping people with taxes and bankruptcy, what's your phone number and your contact number?
My phone number is 312-664-6649. Or if you want a copy of my book, which is Deal with the IRS Problem Today, go to freeirsbook.com.
And I'll tell you, I know Steve personally. And he returns calls. He gets on the phone with you. He tries to help you, just like I do. So this is not an infomercial. This is good information for people who need help. I'm going to take your calls when we come back. This is the Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back. I'm here with Steve Leahy. We're talking about taxes and bankruptcy, but we're also taking all of your legal questions. I've got a couple interesting texts. My 26-year-old daughter did not file her Illinois tax return when she was 19. She owed $25. I found the return when cleaning her drawers out this weekend. Do we file?
The answer is you probably should file because in Illinois, the statute, they can go after you for 20 years. And for federal court, for federal, it's 10 years. There's what they call a CSED, collection statute expiration date, after I filed my tax return, they can't come after me anymore. So I don't know if she said that was filed and she owes 25
or
never
filed. Yeah,
or
maybe it was filed, but they didn't have
So if it wasn't filed, maybe I don't file it.
Yeah. Okay, from the 618 area code, if I sell my coin collection, do I have to claim it on my taxes?
The answer is if
because he has to sell the coin collection in order to pay his taxes, right? All the coins.
That's right. And if there's a capital gains, right? So what's the basis? So if I paid X amount of money for those coins, and now they're worth X times 100, well, yeah, there's a capital gains. It's like any other asset. You have to pay, now if you sell to some, I'm not going to tell you that how is the IRS going to know? But it's the law says, yes, you have to pay tax on all your income, no matter what the source is.
We have a texter who asks what the law of abandonment is in Illinois. She says there is an intention to separate, but before the terms, he decided to leave. I'm not quite sure I know exactly what your issue is, but abandonment really doesn't come into play in Illinois anymore because abandonment was a grounds for divorce, and now we don't have to have a grounds for divorce. All we have to have is what we call irreconcilable differences, which really just means we don't get along. So can people leave the house? Yeah, they can leave the house. There's nothing wrong with leaving the house. Just know once you leave the house, you might be ordered to continue to pay mortgage payments if your name is on the deed and your name is on the mortgage. mortgage, and if your spouse files for support, she could say, you know what, not only do you have to pay support, maybe child support or something like that, but you also have to pay the mortgage. So, but abandonment, I hear that all the time, and there's really no place for it in Illinois law. Let's go to Gary in Arlington Heights. Hi, Gary. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, Karen. Hi, Steve. I don't have an IRS question, even though my brother-in-law is an IRS agent.
Oh, wow. The enemy.
I have a girl that I try to help who's like 50 and I'm 70. And I helped her out to stay at my place for a few days. And the few days keep getting longer and longer. So I went to the police station. Normally, I just kick them out. She's not paying rent. She's not paying for anything at all. She has no money. And I went to the police station to say, can I kick her out? And they go, well, if she's been there 3 weeks or longer, she's a squatter, I guess. Is that the term? Where you can't kick her out, you have to get a court order to move her out. Am I correct about
yeah.
that?
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm not sure of all the details, but yeah, you're going to have to evict her.
I've heard
evict
of this.
Her, even though she's not paying anything
yes.
and she's not contributing anything in you know, she's supposed to move out, and she keeps saying she's moving out, but she's not moving out.
You know, the laws are really favorable for people who have established a residency somewhere. They don't like to kick people out. They don't allow people. They don't like to allow people to evict people and have them on the street. And this is the problem, Gary. You're doing a great service. Unfortunately, you have to be an example here that, you know, you try to help somebody, a nephew or whoever, or a girlfriend or whatever, and you want them out, and you can't. And you have to go through the eviction process, which is a very tedious process. You have to give a certain number of days notice, and you have to post it, and you have to do that. And if they won't leave, you may have to go to court. And it's a process that is a little bit difficult. So, I mean, you know, obviously you're going to try to do the best to have her leave of her own volition. And you can maybe even tell her that now she's going to have to pay rent. And if he kicks her out, you know, you kick her out, she's going to have to pay rent. But it's...
Yeah, she's not on the lease. And another problem, she wants the air conditioning on, which she's not paying, which I'm paying, and I said no, the air conditioning will not go on. It's my, you know, my responsibility to pay. Am I correct in that area?
Yeah, I mean, you're on the lease and you're on the utility. She's got no obligations, and she's got some rights. I'm sorry to say that, but if you want me to refer you to an eviction lawyer, please give me a call. Thanks for that, and I hope that everyone got that message that this sounds like a really nice guy. Gary's doing a favor for somebody, and he's going to get the raw end of that. Let's go to Tom in Clarendon Hills. Hi, Tom. Welcome to WGN.
Hi, Karen. Hi, Steve. thank you for what you're doing. I want to try and make my complicated question simple. I have an original divorce decree from 07, and I've had many motions where I had custody, Karen, of my kids, lost custody, regained custody in 2016. So I have a debt with child support, which my adult children know, et cetera, et cetera. I'm still paying the statutory interest on my, it's like 9% on my 07 divorce out of Rolling Meadows. I was awarded custody in 16. For about 19 months where my children were still minors, I received no child support, yet I was still obligated, which is completely makes sense, to pay the debt I had. Do I have, and they've been emancipated since 2017, and I'm very happy to not be in court. Just out of curiosity, with me footing the bill for all their college expenses, I'm trying to stop the statutory interest and just pay the principal. Do I have any recourse on that maybe 18 months where they were living with me via motion, and never received one penny in child support? I've never claimed, Steve, my children for taxes ever. I mean, it's kind of backwards, but
yeah,
I figured I'd call
Tom,
and ask.
You know, this is, again, another lesson, a life lesson for people, because if you had the children and you had your child support obligation that was still in the court order and you didn't change it, it doesn't change unless and until you go to court and change it. So during that time, you should have, technically, gone to court, asked to stop.
Oh, I was in court. I was in court a lot.
But what I'm saying is you didn't ask the court to stop the child support and for you to get child support. You had to have reversed that. You can't go back now and say you should have paid child support. And I'm not blaming you for this, because I sense that you have been in court so many times and the last thing you were thinking about was child support. Now that you have this issue, you're saying to yourself, how do I get this reduced? And just another FYI for everyone out there, if you owe child support, it's 9% interest. I mean, who gets 9% interest in the whole world except, you know, people who are owed child support? So, you know what? One of the things that you can try to do, and you can call my office and, you know, I maybe can help you try to do this, is maybe try to negotiate something with her to try to get this paid off. I'd have to have a little bit more information about how much you owe and how this is working out. Oh. And you know,
I could tell. Should I tell you? I know what I owe because of that 9%. Just principal, Karen and Steve, I owe about $25K, and in interest, I owe about 19 or 20. Here's my dilemma. I work for a company, and we're going to do a IPO planned in about 2 years. If my investment in shares falls through and my maybe 50K turns into 150, that was, okay, I'm going to have the money then in order to pay off my child support debt a couple of years in the future. It just really burns my bridges, guys, and then I'm going to have about equivalent in interest, statutory interest, as in principal. And I wanted to know in the future, would I be able to have any negotiation leverage because I have the money then?
Yeah. So, Tom, I'm going to put you on hold here. What I think you should probably do is just take a good look at this. And you said that the kids are in college. Are you paying the kids college? If you're paying the kids college, then maybe you go back to court and ask your spouse for a contribution to college. I don't know what she makes. I would have to look at this all together, because if there is a way for you to say, listen, I'm paying $30,000 a year for the kids to go to college and you should contribute, maybe you can knock that off the child support and work out a deal whereby she doesn't contribute, but then you don't have to pay back that child support. I mean, again, I don't know all the facts here. We're getting lots of calls, and you know what? I am going to have to take a break here, and I want to say goodbye to my guest. Steve, you have to come back.
Thanks so much, Karen.
So many calls here and so many texts. Steve Leahy, the law offices of Steve Leahy, who helps people fighting the IRS, both business and personal. Can you give out your contact information again, and also your contact information on how to get the free book that you have?
312-664-6649, or go to freeirsbook.com. I wanted to mention David Hochberg and Mega Pro Joe because they promised me to give me a dollar.
They promised to give you a dollar to mention him on my show.
That's right. He's a friend of mine.
Is that what it's all about? Just a dollar?
That's right.
Anyway, so please come back again. I'll give out my number in case anyone wants to reach me or Steve. If you didn't get Steve's number, 312-332-7800, and I'm at WGN at AskKarenConti.com. We'll be back in a minute.